Women's Deacon. No, Women's Deacons. Women Deacons. That's what it is. 3, 2, 1. Female Deacons, Women's Ordination. Apparently, it's all the rage amongst those who presume to be Catholic but are actually modernists. So today we're going to look at the history of women's ordination, so-called, and this whole idea of women deacons, deaconettes. What do we call them, Tim? Everybody likes to say deaconess, but then deaconette. The feminists don't even like that.
Comedians, deaconettes. How about deacons? Like
deacons with a Z? Yeah.
Let's call them nothing.
Yeah.
let's call them undefined. Undefined. Empty set.
Yeah. So, you know, it's interesting when I was doing the research for the book, the St. Gala Mafia, one of their punch items is women deacons. This Cardinal Martini, who's really the Don, he's the godfather of the St. Gala Mafia. He was about women deacons. And it goes back to altar girls, and people don't like us talking about that, but we got to talk about it. And it's what we call gradualism. You know, you don't just say, hey, we want a female for Pope or female cardinals. You have to start. It's a slow roll.
Right. Right. Yeah. Incrementalism, gradualism. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. It's boiling the frog slowly. And that's what other purpose could what purpose does an altar boy have? It's basically to show, liturgically speaking, the altar boy around the altar and to begin helping the priest so that just to help discern vocations.
That's right.
What purpose then does an altar girl have?
Yeah. Yeah. The altar boy is a apprentice. You know, we don't really think about apprentices anymore, but if you go back in the history of church or Europe, you know, if you want your son to be a blacksmith when he's 13, 14, he goes to the blacksmith shop and starts working there for free. It's basically trade school. It's like college. And he learns how to heat the metals and the different kind of metals and to braid the metals and how to make a sword and how to make a horseshoe and all that. And, you know, hopefully one day he inherits that shop or he goes to another town and opens up a blacksmith shop. Well, same thing with the priesthood. You get some young men in there and they give it a shot. They try it out. You don't like it, you want to get married? Great. You do want to be a priest? Here's the path. So, and you look at what an altar boy does, even in the Latin Mass, it's pretty complicated. It's impressive to see these 11-year-olds reciting the Confiteor, reciting all the responses, hands together, right angle turned. I mean, they've got these guys trained amazingly, but it's not rocket science. I mean, I have seen faithful priests in small situations like retreats and whatnot. They're able to say Mass without an altar boy. It's not ideal. It's not that great, but the altar boy is not of the essence of the Mass. It's an add-on.
Sure.
You know, when I was an Episcopalian priest, they did the slow roll. They started with the altar girls. Then they did the women deacons. Then they did the women priests. We used to call them priestesses. And then they did the bishops. We used to call them bishopettes. Full takeover, but they did it gradual. They did it gradual.
You have to. Mm-hmm. That's the only way to do it. Yeah. I mean, so there's no purpose when you ask. That's how gradualism works. Is you don't ask at each increment or at each new step. You don't have an interlocutor asking, "What's the telos here? What's the end game?"
Yeah.
And if you do, then the game's up. You can only boil that frog in water. If the frog were able to ask, I guess a fairy tale frog gone awry, he ends up
not kissing the princess,
but yeah, he's a prince. He's not kissing the little princess or whatever. He winds up being boiled alive. If he could ask, if he could speak and say, to what temperature are you turning this puppy? Then the jig would be up. Yeah. But since you don't ask, you know, if we continue not to ask, well, what, again, people, you're saying people don't like the fact that we're ragging on altar girls, but what's the purpose, right? Well, do something if it serves a function, a telos and an ergon, but it doesn't. So why not jettison it? It doesn't serve a discernible function that would be recognized as good by the universal church. It is serving a function. They keep it hidden. And the function is the subject of today's show.
Yep. I want to drop some some science on everybody here, as we used to say back in the, when was Dropping Science? Was that late 80s, Tim?
I think that's early 90s.
Is it early 90s? Remember, right?
Yeah, I think maybe late 80s or very early 90s.
It's like Tribe Called Quest, right? Like somewhere around there? Or
during,
90?
During
or
Tribe
during?
Called
okay.
Quest. Yeah.
Right, I'm going to drop some science here. This is Benedict the 14th, not the 16th, renewed the prohibition against females serving at the altar with this statement, quote, "Women should not dare to serve at the altar. They should be altogether refused this ministry," end quote. It also refers back 5 centuries earlier to Pope Innocent IV, who said the same thing. And they refer back to Pope Gelasius, Pope from 492 to 496, who also condemned any women serving at the altar. Drop the mic. So why do we have girls serving on the altar?
Well, you know why? I mean, if you ask the fathers of the Amazonian Synod, any of the Germans, they're all but articulating it already.
Yeah.
You know, the church will, quote, never be the same again after this Amazonian Synod. The frightening language that our ears are strangely enough growing accustomed to. How does one grow accustomed to language like this? We're hearing it every 6 months with either a synod or some sort of darkling gathering, official or unofficial, in Rome. That's obviously the purpose. This is what the next step in this thing is: women deacons, deacons, after altar girls, and of course the terminus is women priests. And
well, we said in our previous show, I can't remember if it was you or me, but the terminus, the telos to this whole thing, is Monsignor Luigi and Monsignor Mario, gay sure. lovers, open in the congregation in the parish. That's Monsignor Mario and Monsignor Luigi holding hands at the back door of the church, greeting people. That's the end game.
In some red overalls and green overalls, Mario and Luigi.
That's right.
So that would be, I guess, the, you can have a series of final causes. You're right. That's more the cause behind
that's
the cause.
That's
the remote final cause. The final cause of the girls qua girls,
yes,
would be. Or maybe it's only the formal cause. The formal cause of the girls qua liturgical servants or whatnot is first the altar server, then deaconesses, and then priestesses. But yeah, they don't really care. Well, I mean, the one thing that liberals in the church don't give a damn about that we know is the liturgy, right?
No.
I mean, they don't care about the liturgy. They don't care about the liturgical form, so they don't care about adding a liturgical form, which you can't do anyway.
Yeah, the only thing they care about is not allowing the old stuff. They hate that. They'll mock it.
Because the old stuff is a categorical preclusion of whatever you're calling the remote final cause. Remote final causes, where they want to take it. Homo heresy stuff. I mean, like we talked about a couple shows back, right?
Yeah.
All of the earliest heretics, maybe more serious heretics, because they're more of in violation of the first commandment about God's, you know, uniqueness and his unicity alone. That might make him angrier, might be more sacrilegious by itself. But what you could say about those first heretics, you know, the 400s, guys like Arius. We don't often stick up for Arius here on TNT, but one thing that can be said is it might or might not at least have been an intellectual error, you know, that is just made on the basis of an intellectual error alone. This sexual stuff, everything in the church now, from leading up to and away from Amoris Laetitia, April 8th, 2016, is all, you know, centered right on the loins of human beings. It's just trying to make all manner of sexual perversion okay, and this is no exception from that rule.
That's right. Yeah, we hear, you know, the early Gnostics were given to sexual vice, the Manichaeans were given to sexual vice, the Albigensians were given to sexual vices, part of their heresy was sexual license. But you don't ever hear the father saying Arius is getting it on with some dudes, or he's got a harem of chicks.
Yeah,
that he travels with, right? Presumably it was a dogmatic debate. Now, let me say, denying the divinity of Jesus Christ is way worse than, you know, sexual sins. But sure, now
I led with that.
Yeah. You led with that. But now, like you're saying, everything is they. And if you ask anyone about, you know, the sexual, you know, the James Martins and the Caspers and all these people, they don't even really care about the Nicene Creed or Arianism.
No,
they just be.
No.
They think Muslims are part of the people of God. Jewish people right. are part of the atheists are people. I mean, for them, dogmas don't even matter. It's a piece of paper on a desk.
Right. Although there's something to all I was saying, of course, it's maybe more offensive to God. I think it would be hard to argue that it's not more offensive to God to deny the Trinity. It's so ontologically, you know, it's the ontological basement to all the other theology that follows, fundamental theo and all that. But what's especially despicable about tweaking faith and morals, the actual moral theology of the church, to befit one's own life, is that it isn't just an intellectual error. This is, I guess I'm rephrasing what I said earlier.
Right.
Same idea rephrased. I mean, I don't see outside of an egregious intellectual error made by Arius and then tons and tons of sort of progenitors that repackaged Arianism for the next 300, 250 years. You don't see a lot that's in it for him. You know, it's just a stupid right. heresy. And he was contumacious in his errors. He was yep. an error of contumacy. He stuck with it. We talked about how difficult it is for the church to condemn you. They really make it easy to back out. So I'm not defending him. I'm just saying with the sex sins, it's not just – who knows? Maybe Arius was a perv in his private life.
May have been.
But he wasn't trying to say that it's okay. Now, these guys are taking sexual perversions that have been agreed upon, signed, and sealed for 1,900 years. And then yeah. starting about 1,900 years into Christianity, saying, maybe this is okay. Maybe we can reverse this teaching, even though we're not allowed to reverse teachings and can call it dogma. It's wicked because it is the unforgivable sin of hypocrisy, right? Do you want your cake? You want to do the wrong thing and eat it too. Whereas if Arius was doing a dude on the side, to use your term, or had a harem of chicks.
Also my unfortunate term.
you're quoting Shakespeare, or is that Hemingway? Doing a dude on the side. If he's doing that, then he's willing. There's something, there's mm-hmm. one thing noble about it. Nothing in the act.
Yeah.
But what's noble is I'm willing to pay for this. He's right. not overturning justice itself. Hypocrisy, you're trying to overturn justice yeah. itself. And that's what's behind female deacons, female altar boys, female priests. It really is all leading toward the general blending of the sexes in Catholic teachings so that you blend the sexes, like what people today call genders, and then you blend the sexual acts so that there's no clear moral teaching on them, I think.
Yep. Speaking of, you know how Arius died?
No.
Okay. I got a video on this, everybody. You should pause this video. Go watch my video, Taylor Marshall, How Did Arius Die? He was going to communion in Constantinople. The emperor had just said he's going to receive communion. He told that to the patriarch of Constantinople. The patriarch of Constantinople prayed to Jesus and said, I cannot give Arius communion. He's a horrible heretic, heresiarch. So either kill me or kill him.
Wow.
So the next day, Arius and all of his followers were coming into Constantinople to the cathedral. And all of a sudden, Arius had a little grumble in his tummy. And he's like, I got to go to the latrine. Where's the latrine? So they pointed to a public restroom nearby. This is a documented story, folks. He went in there and he never came out. And they're sort of embarrassed. Like, where's Arius? He went in there and he had a prolapse, dude. his guts came out and he died on the toilet.
Wow.
Yeah.
What causes that?
I don't know. Maybe he has some problems there, but.
Wow.
But there's.
No, I've never heard
in
this.
In the video, go watch my video, folks. How did Arius die? There's a 2-part video. First part is on Arius getting punched by Nicholas, I think. The second part is on Arius dying. And there are Byzantine icons of Arius on the pot.
I've seen those. And like, I didn't get it.
And like one of them is hair standing up and he's dying on the toilet. And so I think it was, his name was Saint Alexander. It wasn't Alexander of Alexandria. It's a different, but that archbishop prayed that Arius or he would die, and Arius died. That's on the toilet.
Yeah, that kind of prayer is totally, totally holy, right? If there's a heresy arc,
kill him or kill me.
Kill him.
I'm not giving that guy communion. Unlike our hierarchs today, who give communion to all sorts of people who are teaching and living
heresies. Yeah.
Yeah, living the wrong
stuff. When you first said you had a 2-part video on it, I thought you were saying you had 2 parts to the video on just him going to the bathroom. I was like, that's got to be a lot of detail.
I've got a 5-hour treatment. No, these are like 8-minute video, right? It's short, right? But yeah.
1 part.
It'd be something I've had a TNT on. And I think I read somewhere that eventually the Orthodox had to tear down that latrine because it actually became a site of veneration for Arians.
Wow, crazy. For Arians or for Catholic? I mean,
I think for Arians.
Kind of holy for both of them.
They're like, this is where he died, you know?
Yeah.
Dropping.
It wasn't pretty.
Yeah, not good. Dropping science. Bad science. So, anywho.
Wow. Yeah. That's, no, I didn't know that. I want to know what he ate. Make sure not to eat that.
Yeah.
He swallowed some lies.
He swallowed.
Came out the other end.
That's right. All right. Well, so we should talk. We're going to talk about deacons, women deacons. And we're going to go through the whole history. We're going to talk about the Bible. Were there women deacons in the Bible, as some people say? Pope Francis was on the airplane. Was it yesterday? He's on the airplane.
He's done.
Dropping science, as he is wont to do. And he had some things to say about women deacons. He was asked, I'm gonna read some portions from this thing. So someone asked him, hey, what's the story with women deacons? And Pope Francis said that many scholars worked on this. There was a commission to look into female deacons. I think that's what we're supposed to call them, Tim, not women deacons, female deacons.
Okay.
So on the question of female deacons, and the Pope said they were all different, all toads from different wells. I got to give him that. He's got some colorful language here. So people have different perspectives. Everyone thought differently, but they worked together and they agreed up to a certain point. But then each of them has his or her own vision, which isn't in agreement with the others. And they stop there as a commission, and each one is studying on his or her own to go forward, end quote.
I mean, it's kind of like just saying anybody that writes their own paper, like, we agreed about some things.
Yes.
We disagreed about others.
Yes.
Others, we sort of disagreed and sort of, it's like, cool. What he's saying is not that bad, though, which is rare. That's unique here on the show that we're quoting Francis. We're not like, this is bad. I mean, it's not that catastrophic.
Yeah, I read this and I was like, oh, wow, I'm not, you know, worried. It's basically, he's saying it came to a gridlock. There was no agreement. You know, he could have said, well, we all came out and agreed there were women deacons and we're at the Amazon Synod. That's what we're going to do. Surprise. But he didn't. Right. Now, he said this. He goes on. He says this. And this is a little bit more interesting. He says, the commission did find, quote, there were deaconesses in the beginning. But it's difficult to know whether it was sacramental ordination or not.
That concerned me. Yeah.
They helped, for example, and we're going to argue today, folks, that it was not sacramental ordination. It's pretty obvious. But anyway, here's Pope Francis. They helped, for example, in the liturgy of baptism, which was by immersion. When they baptized a woman, the deaconess assisted. So many people don't know this, but in the early church, baptisms were done by immersion. You went into a baptistry and you were naked. No clothes. You came out of the baptism and they gave you the white gown that you wore as a neophyte. They anointed you with the chrism and they gave you the candle. We see all that in the traditional baptism. Well, if you got a naked woman, there is like a sheet held up and the bishop did it or the priest did it. And then the women helped anoint with the chrism because you're dealing with the naked woman here. They also assisted with the anointing of the woman's body. Then a document came out that showed the deaconess was called by the bishop when there was a marital dispute for the dissolution of the marriage or the divorce or separation. When the woman accused her husband of having hit her, the deaconesses were sent by the bishop to look at her body for bruises so they could testify for judgment, end quote. I'm sorry, it goes on here. What is fundamental, the Pope explained, is that there is no certainty that there was ordination with the same form and finality as male ordination. So I actually like what Pope Francis said here.
Me too, aside from the fact that there's nothing untrue about this statement, but it's vastly, arguably infinitely understated. That's like saying there is nothing certain to evidence that there's such a thing as a circular square. It's like, well, yeah, not only are we not certain that a circle can be a square, we're certain that a circle cannot be a square, right? I've never seen this as disputed, even in, I'll give you an example, my 11th grade textbook we use, which is not particularly orthodox on other issues. I believe the publisher is our Sunday Visitor. Mm. The textbook is called The Church Through History. They make very clear, I always appreciated this, in this chapter, in the early church, the Acts of the Apostles church, that such deacons who happen to be female, you can go through, and I know you did a little research on the actual the Greek. It was the word like lowercase h helper, right? So right. They use this word, but like Susanna and Joanna were considered helpers, deacons in right. This first generation of apostles, the apostolic era. But even the book from our Sunday Visitor says these were not ordained deacons. There's no doubt about it. And I thought that's nice that they say that to the kids, even though high school kids aren't looking for an aperture the way that leftists sure. in the church are. They wouldn't be thinking that, but they're like nipping the problem in the bud. They're like, by the way, they say deacons, but this is not, you know, third order right. ordination or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, because here's how they, for those of you that haven't actually been in these arguments and discussions, here's how they go out. Women should be ordained deacons because we see them in the early church. Well, is it sacramental deacons? Is it holy orders or not? It doesn't really matter. Let's just have women deacons because we need female ministry in the church. Even if we grant them that they're not really sacramental, we'll accept that. Remember, it's gradualism, right. folks. Right. Then, because this is how it went in the Episcopal Church. Then you've got these women deaconesses. And then they start saying, well, you know, there's really no difference between a deacon and a deaconess. They should wear the dalmatic. They should wear the crossway stole. They should read the gospel and liturgy, because now you're being sexist yeah. because, you know, it's the same job. They should have the same roles. So same then they title. Push that.
Yeah.
And then they say, well, you know, deacon is a sacramental order. And you say, wait, I thought you said back then it doesn't really matter. Like, well, it is a sacramental order, and we have the same sacramental order as you guys have. We women deacons as right. the male deacons. And then everybody kind of shuffles their feet, and they're like, okay, there's women real sacramental deacons. And then you wait 3 years, and then you say, hey, if there can be sacramental holy order deacons, there can be holy order sacramental priests.
Right.
Right. And you do that for 5 or 10 years, and then you raise it to bishop. That's how it goes, folks.
Yeah.
That's the game plan.
And if a given viewer, listener out there suffers incredulity, you know, they're just, I get the theory like Taylor Marshall, but, you know, I don't buy it. I understand it. It's an intelligible theory, but I don't think that's actually how it plays out. Then, well, there's not quite anything for that aside from the fact that just consult history. This is how it's been done really aggressively over the past 50 years for every change that's been made. This is how communion in the hand works.
Yep.
This is how non-kneeling communion works. This is how a bunch of the changes to the forms in the liturgy worked. And there are even if you look at the changes that you're always talking about to the breviary, more and more, there's an element of gradualism even to that. It wasn't all just one change. I'm trying to think of changes from the 50 years previous to the last 50 years. It's also just human nature, right? It's evidenced by both history and what we know a priori of human nature. Gradualism works. Think about, Gandalf and the dwarves in The Hobbit, right? When they go to Beorn's house, he's like, okay, we have 14 dwarves here. I'm going to introduce you two at a time so he doesn't lose his temper all at once. It's gradualism. It's boiling a frog in water.
Yeah, yeah. And you look at who are the people advocating for female deacons. It's guys like Cardinal Martini, who wanted ecumenical masses. He wanted Protestants receiving communion. He openly rejected Humanae Vitae. It's like contraception is fine. Follow your conscience. Lax on abortion. Group absolution. No more private confessionals. All this stuff was part of the St. Gallen Mafia agenda, Cardinal Martini's agenda, very open about it. Even subverting John Paul II in the open on some of these issues in the late 80s. So you can say, I don't really follow you guys. This is, you know, this isn't really it. But look at the suspects. Look at Protestants. Protestants caved on this and all of them have women's ordination.
Right. And that's the other mark of gradualism is anytime. I've mentioned it on the show before. In law, we call it hollow out. Anytime there's a little tear in the fabric, it will get hollowed out because all you do is you poke through the little pencil first, then you can put your finger through, then eventually you can put your fist through. One little exception, which makes bad law for this reason, and the whole fabric is thrown asunder, torn wide open. One question we've never really asked here on TNT in at least the terms that I would ask you right now is, but I think very interesting and enough ground to speculate. What is the terminus from the perspective of the St. Gallen Mafia of this Bergoglio Pope Francis papacy, right? Because we quoted, on probably at least five shows that they said there was one Buenos Aires bishop or archbishop, I forget what he was when they started meeting in 1996, who would serve the goals of the St. Gallen Mafia, and his name was, Bergoglio. What was the goal? After Amoris Laetitia came out in 2016, I thought, okay, this was it. You got one big, increment accomplished, and now he's sort of out and out, an opponent of at least some major solidified church teaching, whether or not it's dogma or anathema or whatever. But now they're going for more. These are other little increments or other sizable increments, not little increments. What's the goal? I mean,
the goal is clear. We got to go back to Alta Vendita. In the Alta Vendita, it specifically states that we get a pope after our own heart who promotes Freemasonic goals. If you hear Freemasonic and it freaks you out and you're like conspiracy theory, okay, just scratch that word and put in the word secularist goals. The brotherhood of man, the equal distribution of goods, communism, religion as rational and non-fideistic. All religions are equally right and they're equally wrong. They use this kind of language, like you go to a classroom and you tell a bunch of 5-year-olds, draw a picture of God. And some of them draw the sun. Some of them draw Jesus. Some of them draw a field. The Hindu kid draws a cow or something. Like everybody does their drawing. And then you post them up and then the parents come in and smile. Oh, it's so cute. That's how Freemasons or secularists look at religion. They're all equally wrong and they're all equally good. Everybody gets a pat on the head. Because ultimately, they're all pointing to the same thing, which is what? Love of other people, getting along to go along.
Right.
That's it.
Love of man. Yeah.
Love of man. There is nothing transcendent. There is nothing true breaking from above into our world. All we have is the horizontal.
Absolutely.
That's all we have. And so that's the end game.
That's the end game. I meant with specific reference to this pontificate. I mean, I think now that they've gotten one, I mean, Francis is not young by any stretch of the imagination. I think now that they've gotten one and they've accomplished a couple big things from their midnightly point of view, the goal is to get more, right? I mean, I don't think they remember also from the Alta Vendita, they say one soldier dies in the struggle and the next one takes his place. So I think their next, wherever the midnight, the St. Gallen Mafia is having these midnightly meetings, they're probably like, okay, who's the next guy? Who's up next? Because Francis is old? 85. For
sure. No, they've got it in the pocket.
How much, I'm wondering specifically, I thought after Morse Letizia, it's just me, that, okay, he's out now. He's out. He's out of the closet as a modernist. And after Morse Letizia in April 2016, of course, conservatives took a while. There's some weird lag time for really the red pill to kick in. The red pill didn't kick in for almost 2 years. The red pill really kicked in for a lot of people.
It didn't kick in until 2018.
Right. Yeah. Right. It was last summer.
Yeah.
It was weird because I was like, I read it April 8th. I remember where I was sitting on my couch. I was like, this is everything I suspected he was. I mean, I was always suspicious. Like Marge says of Bart, like one little boy never lost his distrust. That little boy in this case was Tim Gordon. I was like, okay, I know. I knew it. But I was shaking my fist for the next at least year to year and a half, waiting for this to settle on people. It settled last summer, so fine. Better late than never. Got it. Everyone who's on the right side now is on the right side now. But
not necessarily. Let's remember our Jimmy Akin has been battling all week.
Yeah, but he ain't on the right side. I mean,
he represents Catholic Answers and Catholic Radio, and it's still in 2019 a social media feud over Amoris Laetitia and all these things. Like,
you mean among even non communists in the church? Because he's certainly not that.
People listening to Catholic Answers or on the way home from work, right, are hearing a lot of the stuff for the first time.
It's true.
And Jimmy Akin is trying to shore it up, but the dam's broken, man.
He's one of the stragglers.
Yeah, I mean he's putting all of his fingers and thumbs in the holes of damn things blown open. Come on, Jimmy. Come on over.
We'll take you. Better late than never. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing.
Come on, Jimmy.
Well, I mean, yesterday he's saying, kind of similar argument to the Susanna Joanna argument about communion in the hand originally. Yeah. I mean, taken in the proper context, none of these arguments, let's go back to resource of law, original sources, all that. It's like in the proper context, it vindicates everything that, I don't know what you call them, traditional minded people in the church have been. We don't have to say rad trads because that has the tincture of politics. But just come on over to the side where you're comfortable making critiques of whatever contradicts the logos. How about that? How about putting it that way?
I like that.
We'll take you. No one's gonna. Some of our good friends that we've interviewed on this show, I've interviewed lots of people. Some people have been there all along, like the Skojex and the Life Sites. They've been there pretty much before. During the synods, when I was reading it, I was getting it all from Skojic.
They were the hipsters, man. They were against it before it was cool.
No, I know. Yeah. And I was with hipsters. Them, but I was just kind of reading silently, publishing the occasional thing on like Crisis. But they were the hipsters. Then you had some really on top of it people that really kind of came out vis-a-vis the Pope, not the other bishops. Later, like this summer, like our buddy Voris, it's like timing doesn't matter. Everyone takes their own time to process things. Just Jimmy Akin, Catholic Answers, come on. You guys have done a lot of good work for a lot of good people throughout the years. And again, let's put aside the differences between the clans. Just get right with God on these issues.
Look, it's 2019, Jimmy Akin and Catholic Answers. You can't say everything the Pope says is orthodox. I mean, going back to Eric, here's the Jimmy Akin argument. All these things can be interpreted as orthodox, ergo, they are orthodox. No, 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 no. That's not a good argument. Arius and his friends claim that what Arius was teaching could be interpreted in conformity with the Nicene Creed. That was their big argument. And the church says, no, you're a heretic. So just because it can be doesn't mean that it is. I'm sure we could spend all day long and make Luther and explain away all these things Luther said. Hours and hours, like Catholic Answers Live doing it. But that doesn't make Luther orthodox. Just because you can do it doesn't mean it is. And so that's just got to go. Bye.
It's got to go.
Bye, Felicia.
The hour is late, you know, like the sun is both risen and set on the Francis pontificate, where faithful Catholics ought to be saying, like, oh, as Pope Francis said today. And they're laudatorily, like, you know, trying to just say it like as if this is a non-controversial source for a quotation. It's like, even if you quote me, hey, Pope Francis said there are three persons in the Trinity. I'm like, what? Okay, I have to double check everything here now because of the source. This is how human beings work. This is how the human intellect works. So I forget where that got us. But yeah, the Susanna Joanna argument, I was actually surprised not to find it in a more robust adversarial form in the, out of the mouth of Francis. And it was a welcome little surprise, I guess. Yeah.
All right, before we get into the – we're going to look at the Phoebe, Romans, Susanna, Joanna, church fathers and all that. But we have to just say at the beginning, why can't women be ordained? We've been assuming it, and now we have to explain it. I'm just going to give you the argument of Thomas Aquinas. When the priest says at the altar, this is my body, it's not Father Chuck or Monsignor Bob saying that. It's in persona Christi. He's in the person of Christ. So when he says the word my there, it's not referring as normal. In normal grammar, if I say, this is my microphone, right? I'm talking about it's in my possession. But sacramentally in the Mass, when he uses my, it's no longer Monsignor Bob. It's Jesus Christ. And bodies only come in two versions. They come in the male version and the female version of the body. Therefore, the minister of this great mystery of transubstantiation must be male. That's it.
Yeah.
This is my body. It must, if it's a female, because remember, Christ is the groom, the church is the bride. It's a nuptial relationship. It's the wedding supper of the Lamb. So, in the liturgy, the bride is being united to the groom. If the priest or priestess is a female saying, this is my body, female body, and offering it to the church, feminine, you now have sacramental lesbianism happening. That's bad.
Okay. I like how you added that's bad.
Yeah,
just as in case, saying just sacramental in case. Liturgical lesbianism isn't res ipsa loquitur are bad.
Yes,
that is bad.
I that like is bad. Said, yeah. So because of this,
not good.
Priests can only be male. Now, someone will say, oh, well, that's just because in the old days, patriarchy, you know, excluded women from everything. No. Look at every pagan religion has female priests, priestesses. The Romans had priestesses. When St. Paul and Christ our Lord and Peter were walking the earth, all those religions they were encountering had priestesses. It was actually part of the culture to have priests and priestesses. Female oracles, Delphi, all these places. It was Judaism in the Old Testament and then Catholicism that said, no, the priest represents God. God is the transcendent. He's the masculine. Creation is the feminine, Mother Nature. And so the priesthood is always male. That was unique in antiquity. So it's not because Catholicism was conforming to culture. It was actually countercultural in having male-only ministry.
That's perfectly said. I don't know if as a co-host you say that to one another, but that's perfectly said. I mean, I'm writing this feminism book right now, and that's the exact.
You got like a title for this feminist book?
We got to start calling it something. No Christian feminism. And so here's why, just simple, straightforward.
You going to have a chapter on women's ordination? You should.
It'll be part of it. Should be part of chapter three, which my bro is handling. My actual brother, my literal brother, David. So he's doing kind of some of the heavy lifting ecclesiological chapters. Mm. But exactly like you said 3 minutes ago, there has to be a connection. There are two points I want to make on the heels of what you just said. Number one, there's always a connection between Christology and ecclesiology, or else
every time,
or else nothing we're doing matters. Yeah, that has to be like, so like you said, Christ is the bridegroom. The church is his bride. This is something we want to take almost literally. I'm not sure what the proper distinction there would be, but we don't want to just be symbolic about it. Like St. Paul in several of the letters is talking about.
We could say it's analogical, and we could use Fourth Lateran Council 12:15 to say that Christ is more a groom than you and I are grooms to our wives.
Right. Right. Good. So analogical. Yeah,
Christ isn't participating in what Tim and Taylor are to their wives. We are participating in what Christ is to the church.
Precisely.
So Christ's groomness, his bridegroomness, is prior to ours.
Right. Right. That's that Thomistic analogy, just the level of analogical modes of reasoning are the only way to conceive of real aspects of being. This is why Thomas Aquinas is the first doctor in the Catholic Church. It's amazing stuff and fun to read if you have an appreciation board. But the point is to strip it all down. It's Christ is the bridegroom. Oh, there he is.
I'm just going to hold this up now for the rest of the show.
Yeah, okay. Now put it in front of your face.
Yeah, I could cut out a little mouth hole here.
Yeah. You know, what's that would be a hell of a thing. I mean, it boils down to if you accept the scriptures, the letters of St. Paul, everything that's said there about the relationality of men to women. Actually, I'll conflate my two points. I'll just make one point. Christology and ecclesiology. We have priests that don't speak in the nomen de Christi, right? They don't speak in the name of Christ. They act in the person of Christ.
That's right.
That's what it's not nominalism. It's a type of a placeholder. No, it's not nominalism. It's an ontological placeholder. The priest is in the person of Christ. Maybe under nominal, just the name of Christ, there are probably other theological errors, but maybe you could make this argument. In the person of Christ, maleness matters. Jesus is part of the Trinity, yes, but he himself is a fully human man, was male. And you have other evidentiary things that don't prove it, but are highly evidentiary, like, 12 apostles, they're all men, even though he loved Mary more than he loved the apostles, but he still picks all men. That's evidentiary. That's not a proof. The proof is when you pick a man to act in the place of a man, then that's what we're calling a priesthood. An actual priesthood of ecclesiology. When you pick the vocation of ordination, when you pick here's the second proof. When you pick the vocation of matrimony, then we're called men are actually called to be priests of the ecclesiola, the church miniature. Right. And
father.
So the same relation.
That's what we call father, him father.
Yeah. 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 That's why we call him father. That's why you call your father, priest at church father. Well, analogically, a man who's the head of a household, he's a householder, relates to his flock, wife and kids, as a priest does to his flock. And there is a headship there, which means, the human head is the center in a way. And all of these strains of feminism, it gets me when conservatives and Christians alike say, they want to characterize everything that's bad about feminism as being part of extreme feminism or radical feminism. It's just part of feminism, right? Egalitarianism is wicked, and the connection between Christology and ecclesiology proves it. There is no, there's no equal. Instead of saying, let's try to look at what we can, have some study groups, you do your research, I'll do mine, we'll all say things partly the same and partly different, or whatever Francis, however he phrased that.
Toads in a different well.
Right. Why study what we can to show how similar men and women are? What if we approached it from the opposite angle and said, let's study how different men and women are. Let's study why are we studying the question of female? Why should females be deacons, altar boys, or dare I say priests in the first place? There's no good ground for it. Yeah. So, I mean, this is kind of like saying, let's spend thousands of man hours studying whether or not we can square a circle. No, why are you doing that in the first place? Squares and circles are like opposite things. Men and women are so different, so radically different in our souls, not just in our bodies. The bodies express a formalistic difference in the soul that we do not, that it's strange that people would be putting this proposition under so much scholarly, you know, light of scrutiny. You're wasting your time. We're utterly different.
Right. Ain't nothing but a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
That's how you have to approach people when they're like, what about this? Here's what Catholics need to get used to saying. Egalitarianism of all sorts, I'm quoting Thomas Aquinas from the Treatise on Law, it's evil, right? Yeah. If you equalize property among the masses, well, you get rid of all kinds of aristocrats. This will destroy justice in society. Yes. If you equalize, to quote Plato and Aristotle, if you equalize the sexes, you're going to get gender dysphoria, which is what it wound up with us. And you're going to get disharmony in the family, divorce everywhere. And there has to be a clear head. We would never consider even the liberalist, most radical opponent of the civil society. I've never heard say that the military should do away with all hierarchy, right?
No
should
more be generals. Egalitarian. When there's a war going on, they should all huddle together under all the bombs dropping and be like, okay, who wants to charge? Who wants to go right? Who wants to go left?
Right. No. Right. Vote. Yeah. Yeah.
Let's go left. All right.
Yeah.
6 out of 10 say go left. We're going left. No, you can't. Think about football. If the quarterback or what, and the coach wasn't calling the shots, and it's like, we're going to vote amongst the linemen what I should do next.
Right. You got 40 seconds to call a play. And it's like, well, no. And then they're like, okay, but I want to, and I have many friends, I know you do as well, that try to run their marriages like this, that are like, well, we split everything between us. I'm like, yeah, me too. I mean, this is my best friend I'm talking about here. It's like I'm having to do the metaphysics of what it is to really, truly be married to your best friend. That's true. So we don't have to discuss. I mean, most things we can just discuss rationally. But if there's a disagreement, it's the fundamental radical difference of a man and a woman. We know which way it's going to go, right? It's just well, I'm the leader. I have the higher rank. That's just how it
goes.
But except men are like literally like, no, we talk everything to a conclusion. This is as outrageous as what you said about you're huddling under a boat with bombs going off over your head, and you're like, okay, we're gonna get a symposium and we're gonna decide whether to flank left or flank right. It's like, we'll die.
No.
If the exigency is a life, if you married the right person, you're gonna agree most of the time.
Here at TNT, we're dropping bombs today. People are gonna get mad. The husband has the final say.
It's not debatable.
It's go not read debatable.
It doesn't matter whether you're Catholic or Protestant. Even the Protestants are better on this than most Catholics.
They actually are because they follow the Bible.
Because they follow the Bible. The Catholics don't read the Bible, and they just have Father Feelgood giving the sermon, which has redacted language letters.
The passage that we're talking about, they took out. In fact, it used to be in the traditional wedding, you heard that. Now they've cut. It's optional. You can cut it out in the modern Catholic wedding. So optional, you tell Catholics this and they're like, that's not in the Bible. Well, yeah, it's not in the Bible you heard at the Novus Ordo NAB because they snipped it.
Yeah. And we're not just talking Ephesians 5. You're talking Ephesians 5 because it's got a liturgical place. St. Paul and like 9 other places.
Yeah, 1 Corinthians. Stuff. Yeah.
1 Corinthians. 1 Corinthians is a starker statement of it.
Well, yeah, that's where you got 5. The head veiling and the male headship. Right. The man is the head of the wife. So these are all passages that the modern feminist and even your modern Catholic squirm. There's people hearing us talk right now and they are squirming. They don't like hearing what we're saying right now. But I'll tell you this, people, everyone I know who has a happy, holy marriage with a wife who is thriving and happy and in good shape and moving forward in life has a strong husband that she trusts. The husband is the oak. You want to find happy Catholic wives, you will find the oak of the husband. You want to find miserable, unhappy wives, you'll find a flimsy, non-oak husband.
Yeah. Or just someone that's, dare I say, if we scour the ranks, if we widen the net even a little further, and you, to borrow some language from Miley Yiannopoulos, who published my book in its first edition, literally, like, you want to find someone that bought even a little more into the feminist rhetoric. And you're talking about 38, 42 year old woman that bought into this stuff and lives in a small cramped apartment, bought they could have it all. They have a cat they hate. They have a group of friends they hate. They haven't, you know, they haven't done what they know in their heart of hearts they've been invoked to do, a lay vocation, to get married and have kids and find a good man and honor him or whatever. And it's the path of misery, and lots of poor souls have been duped into this form of life, and it's really bad. But I think it's First Corinthians.
And for the men out there, you know, you may be thinking your wife wants you to just whatever you say, honey, whatever you want to do, honey, and just the appeaser husband. She doesn't want that. She wants to be on the adventure. She wants you to set up an exciting life. And she's part of that. That's someone exciting. And you're in control. Like, you're the life and the finances and the house and the kids aren't a disaster. You have provided a matrix and a grid for life to flourish and be fun and exciting.
Yeah, I don't. Someone, one of our listeners will correct us, but I'm really glad you said that. I forget who's considered it's not Rush Limbaugh. I'm talking 15 years before Rush. The guy that's considered, he's a secular Jew. Old guy, I think he might have passed away in the last 4 years. He's considered the godfather of AM talk radio. Really smart dude. Okay. I listened to him a little bit in San Diego. I'm forgetting his name. But I heard one of the greatest segments of talk radio was this old dude. He was like 85 at the time when he was saying it. And he said, husbands that are yes men to their wives, they're supposed to be in command, and they gave it up to their wife. It's unfortunately most men nowadays. He said, they're not even suffering from, and he's not Catholic, so he doesn't understand, you know, charity in the headship. In the Christian sense. Yeah, headship. But he's just saying this from natural wisdom. He's saying this is not charity, even though it might look a little bit like an overabundance of meekness or something. He said all it is when these husbands refuse to chasten their wives, refuse to be the leaders, is self-service, and particularly it's sexual self-service, right? They're looking out for their own sex lives is what he said.
Right.
They're not willing to put in the time up front to abide the hierarchy that nature set forth.
That's right.
And I mean, he said a bunch of other great stuff, but it was amazing. So it might be Pat, might be his first name, but I've tried to look him up before, and without the name, I can't find him. Really amazing. It applies that the natural hierarchy is such, it's wired into nature such that it's not a choice. Everyone acknowledges it one way or another. We're just trying to say, let's not let our abject failures to acknowledge it end up affecting liturgical, ecclesiological forms. I mean, that's what we can't do at this point.
That's right. Yeah, and we have people now who think the Catholic Church, the wife, can go ahead and on her own authority change the rules that Jesus set up for his church. Right. And isn't it interesting that it's about matrimony is the main debate? Surprise. Not a surprise.
Right. Yep. And there are really good stats that Pew Research does some of these statistics, and the Brookings Institute does some of the other ones, even though neither of those are far right wing institutions, think tanks or whatnot. But one of the statistics is very stark. It shows even in terms of what the kind of functionality that we'd be talking about with deacons, right? Teaching, you know, helping to teach instruction, speaking at church, which St. Paul does address this, doesn't he? It's a uniquely male function. And one way you can tell is there's a study done on families, which might not be divorced families, but when only one of the parents is Catholic, when only a father is Catholic, It's like 90% abidance. The kids don't fall away. Low attrition rate. If the father's really on fire,
attending mass,
they stay. Whereas with both, it's like the same. No offense, ladies. It's like the same whether it's both parents, it's like 90%. Whether it's just the father, it's like 90% or something really close, like 88%. If it's just the mother, boom, plummets. Why? Because of nature. Because man is the priest of the household. What happened with my generation and yours? Who was taking the kids? Most kids didn't go to mass, you know, over half. Mm. But the kids that did go to mass, who was dragging them? It was our mothers, right? It was our mothers that were like, no, come on, being the chastening voice. That's not believable to young men or young women. Mm. God bless our mothers. They're doing the best they can. And we're going to get
all the
emails.
Mothers watching doing that, thumbs up to you. We're not denigrating.
Good job.
Yeah.
No. I wasn't trying to sound like I was denigrating it. It literally is all she can do. Because what are you going to do? Not observe the... Sometimes, like you said last show about lamentation, you just do what you can do even though you know the numbers are against you.
That's right.
If you have a slouch husband that's not going to church, not doing his first most duties, more important than providing...
Have him watch this video.
Yeah, if you're a slouch, this is worse than not going to work, right?
Yeah.
If you're not getting your family to mass, then this is worse than not going to work. So what would the wife
and by
do?
The way, and by the way, guys, if you're that guy, shame on you. Shame on you.
Yeah. Yeah.
We don't respect you.
Well, it's not only do we not respect you, but this is literally the biggest failing. You're failing at the end game of life, right?
Yeah.
The reason that one gets married, just consult your catechism, is to procreate life as abundantly as you can within your situation and educate.
Thomas Aquinas always does procreate and educate.
Educate, exactly.
And you see that in the Catechism of Trent too. Boom, boom.
Exactly.
Procreate, educate.
And somewhere kind of entailed by both of those sacramentally goes along with just living and education means you got to foster what you've learned to get your sacraments. It means you got to be getting to mass on Sundays. It's an obligation and you have to be talking about it. You have to have enlivening discussions, but start out just getting to mass. If the kid only sees a mom that's kind of devout, then it's like, oh, that's kind of a girly thing. That's the message that's directly seen. Whereas if you see your dad every morning on his knees before he goes to work or something like that, it just sends a totally different message. Why? Is that because men are better than women? No. Men are just better leaders than women. Same as women are better birthers than men, right? They're better birthing
mothers.
Kids.
Yeah,
they're better mothers than men. Men are better fathers than women. This is indisputable stuff. And this might turn controversial. There's no need
this
to
YouTube
open
video
your Bible.
This YouTube video is going to get flagged, Tim. But I don't care.
Yeah. Watch your title. We found late last fall, come November, when he was titling these, and sometimes we'd be talking, what do we say about this? The title matters.
The title box matters on YouTube.
Yeah, they scour the title.
Yeah. If I put feminist in this title, it'll be blocked.
Get out.
Flagged.
Get out.
Gone.
Yeah.
That's why I'm going to have to put deaconess in the title. No one, the YouTube bots don't know what deaconess means.
What is the St. Paul passage? It's not 1 Corinthians and it's not Ephesians 5. I'm forgetting it now. What is the one where he talks about the people that allow women to teach in church?
That's 1 Corinthians.
That's 1 Corinthians?
Yeah.
Is that later or is that excite?
Let me pull it up.
Can we read that? I mean, that seems highly relevant to what we're saying about the deaconesses.
Yeah, let me find
I don't
it
think
here.
People know that. I don't think people, I'll speak while you're finding it. I don't think people know out there that as part of inerrant, infallible scripture, how much of this stuff is
here
just
it is. You
closed.
Ready to drop science?
Do it.
1 Corinthians 14:34. Mm-hmm. Let women keep silent in the churches, for it is not permitted them to speak, but to be subject as also the law saith. So they shouldn't be given talks. They shouldn't be up there. I don't care if it's Mother Angelica, should not be up in the pulpit doing the teaching. That's
so
just infallible word of God, 1 Corinthians 14:34. I know, red pill for some people here, but this is Christianity. This is Catholicism. And again, you can't say it was cultural because in the ancient days,
right,
priestesses were teaching the people. They were right. consulting the female oracles, the sibyls, you know?
It's a strong corollary, the fact that people say, well, half the time leftists will make this point. They'll be like, well, did you know that all these other cultures have it? It's like, yeah, that's what yeah. I say. That militates against the conclusion you're trying to defend. But why I was laughing, right, as you read that is because it's so strong.
Very strong.
And so categorical. I mean, if you have it up still, it's probably worth repeating.
Yeah,
I'll read it again. Why don't we just do an hour show on this? Don't listen to us. Just go read the inerrant word of
God. Go read Ephesians and go read 1 Corinthians. And 1 Corinthians 14. I mean, 1 Corinthians also has everything about head veiling for women, covering their heads.
That's what I was thinking of.
Yeah, that has some strong language. But 1 Corinthians 14 says, verse 34, let women keep silent in the churches, for it is not permitted them to speak, but to be subject as also the law saith, end quote. 1 Corinthians 14:34. Yeah. You know, another interesting thing that we haven't ever mentioned is the second pope was named Linus, Saint Linus. I talk about him in my book, The Eternal City. All right. History has him doing one thing only in his pontificate. Do you know what it is, Tim? You're going to love it. He decreed that women must veil their heads in liturgy throughout the entire Catholic Church.
Oh, wow.
That's the only thing on his pontificate that we have in history. That's his decree. His contribution to Christendom was he said that women should veil their hair in liturgy in churches throughout the church. Second Pope.
Yeah. Wow. Wow.
Saint Linus. Not the Snoopy, or is it Snoopy? Linus and Snoopy?
Yeah.
Peanuts? Yeah. Not that Linus. Saint Linus. Different one. So, there. Okay, so should we go through these deacon passages, Tim?
Sure.
I think we should.
Race through them.
Yeah. So, you already mentioned Luke 8:3. Before we ran tape, you're like, yeah, Joanna and Susanna aren't deacons. I'm like, who's Joanna and Susanna? I've never heard them called deacons. But you were referring to Luke 8:3. I looked it up. I still didn't see how it was a deacon passage. Then I read it in the Greek, and I saw why people say so. So here's the passage in English, Luke 8:3. And Joanna, the wife of Cusa, Herod's steward, and Susanna, and many others who ministered unto him of their substance, end quote. If you go into the Greek, the verb there, so this is not a noun, like they were deacons or deaconesses, but the verb is the verbal form of the term deacon. So it's diakonon. You can hear the word diakonon in there, right? So they were deaconing to Jesus. Now, we need to understand that diakonos and this verb, it literally means to minister or to be a servant. So if someone came and was like clearing your table and bringing you food, that would be deaconing, right? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, dia means through, and the cone is almost like common. Just it's through the common, just doing common work. So deacon is not like a fancy word. It's just, hey, I'm a servant. I'm doing common work. I'm ministering to people. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean that they are ordained deacons.
Yeah.
I mean, we talked about in another show in Romans 13, St. Paul refers to Nero as God's diakonos.
Right. Right.
This is Romans 13:4. The king is God's diakonos, working for thy good. If only thou dost wrong, needest thou be afraid. For it is not for nothing that he bears the sword. We talked about this for the death penalty, remember?
Right, right.
He is God's diakonos still to inflict punishment on the wrongdoer. So this is a great passage because we have the state can bear the sword and kill you, capital punishment, as taught by St. Paul the Apostle. And Paul was referring to the king, and the king at this time is Nero, as a diakonos, a servant. This doesn't mean that the Roman emperor is a deacon.
Ordained. Nero?
He's not ordained. Neronian? He's using the word deacon, but he's using it in a general way. Same with 2 Corinthians 3:6. Paul refers to himself and others as deacons. Well, obviously he's an apostle, but he's also saying, I'm a minister of the gospel. And then the big one that everybody brings up is Romans 16:1, where Paul says, and I commend to you Phoebe, our sister, who is in the deacon, it's hard to translate, in the deaconry of the church that is in Centre. So Jerome translates that as in the ministry of the church. Some people say she's being called a deacon, but here Paul uses sister in the feminine, adelphane, but he uses deacon in the male, diakonon. Hmm. So this is why it probably shouldn't be translated as deaconess. It should be translated as in the ministry of the church.
Yeah.
In the more generic translation. So even in scripture. Now, another thing is I saw this last year and I had always assumed they weren't lying to us, but they were. There's a guy, Pliny the Elder, and he talks about torturing two deaconesses. And I'd seen this quote a lot. So I looked it up in the Latin. And he says, that he tortures two deaconesses to find out more about the Christians. In the Latin, it is ancile quae ministre. Ministre. Ministers. In the Latin, he doesn't use the word deacon, but all these feminists translated into English as deaconesses.
Right.
But it doesn't say deaconess in the Latin. It says ministers. So that's a dead quote.
Sneaky. Yeah.
I just found that out last year. For all those years of seeing that quote. That's why I got to look up stuff in the Latin and the Greek. Because people tricking you.
Right. Right.
Pulling tricks. In the 200. I was surprised. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just surprised that this, my center left church history textbook, I've already said it earlier in the show, was so honest. They kind of go 2-3 sentences out of their way to say, oh, these are not real deacons, these are non-sacramental. I was like, dang, good for you. That's where I learned about props. Susanna, Joanna, Phoebe. Yeah. Just a repeat, though.
I was just going to say, in the 200s, we have this document that's from Syria, the Didascalia. Is that right? Didascalia. I don't know. Teaching of the Apostles. It's Syrian. Didike? No, yeah. Not the Didache. No. It's the Didascalia.
Oh, something else.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to put the accent on that. But it talks about a ministry for women. And it's noteworthy that when you hear people say, oh, there were deaconesses in the early church, 90% of those cases were in Syria, not in Greece or Egypt. Mm-hmm. It's a Syrian thing. And I don't know why that is, but it seems to be concentrated in Syria. Also interesting, we should remember that the Syrians tended to be, even in the 200s, is it Encratites? Is that the term? I might have the word wrong. But anyway, they taught that once you were baptized, you could never have sex, even if you were married. That baptism was continence and celibacy. That was still a big deal in Syria in the 200s.
Wow.
So
how did they get in the pews?
Yeah, in some places in Syria, there's recorded evidence that they refused to use wine in the Eucharist, only water. Because it was too sensual to drink wine, which would be an invalid mass.
Right.
So if you remember, there's a guy named Tatian who was a disciple of St. Justin Martyr. He actually subscribed to no sex after baptism and no wine in the Eucharist. So that being said, I don't really want to trust these people on women deacons either.
Yeah, just I was going to ask you, in the Francis remarks from the plain presser, he mentions this, actually.
Syria, doesn't he?
Syria. Yeah. He said, I mean, again, this is less politically charged, more seems to be, aside from that one sentence, which is sketchy, seems to be more research driven. This is rare. It's a little breath of air, I guess, even though he said. He could have said it stronger, that there's no way that any of these bona fide researches turned up women ever were sacramental or ordained deacons.
Yeah. So I just checked. It's Encratites. I had it right. Encratites is the name of the heresy. It's a Syrian heresy. And it basically says you just can't have any fun. You can't drink wine. Yeah. You're married. Yeah. You can't have relations. Right. So it was the belief that when you receive baptism, you are called to the monastic life is the idea. And no wine, nothing sensual. So it's kind of Manichaean. It's proto Manichaean. Right. And maybe there was Manichaean influence in Syria. And we do know that the Manichaeans in a lot of these Gnostic sects did have female ordination. So it might be the case that Syria in the 200s is being influenced by these quasi-Gnostic or full-out Gnostic teachings.
Isn't this where Augustine went and met Manny? Isn't this where he found it? It was near to Syria.
He didn't meet Manny because Manny's pre him, isn't he?
No, yeah. He met him. He went and he met him.
No, I think Manny died in... when did Manny die? Look him up. This is where we need...
Confessions, like, he says he met him. Unless it was like his close...
No, because Manny dies in 276. 274. So, I mean...
Really?
Yeah.
I thought he died in like 474. Okay, no. So who did Augustine go meet?
He went and met one of the Manichaean bishops. I think it was Faustus.
It was Faustus. Never mind.
Yeah. So he was a Manichaean cleric.
He was the head Manichaean cleric.
He may have been like one of their top dogs. Yeah.
Their top. We'll introduce you to our best man.
Yeah.
I mean, he was really, really underwhelmed, right? I mean, I'm not as an Augustinian the way I'm in a Thomas, but yeah, he met him. He was totally underwhelmed, and then when he ended up meeting Ambrose, he's like, This is what I'm talking about. This is the smartest man. This is ribeye. Alive.
Yeah, Faustus was like bologna sandwich, and then he met Ambrose. This is ribeye.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's interesting is, because I just opened up the Manny page here, that most of Manny's works are preserved in Syrian. Yeah. So my guess is that the Syrian Christians are influenced by Manichaeanism. And so they have women deacons, women clergy, and they've got, you know, these weird prohibitions against sex, which the Manichaeans did, but didn't, depending on your level. So it's probably something to do with Syrian heresy and not anything to do with actual Catholic Christianity, because you don't see it at all in Rome or, you know, mainstream parts of the church.
Right.
And it's cool that Pope Francis grants that.
Sure.
One final here is the Council of Nicaea refers to deaconesses in the context of heretics. This is Canon 19 of the Council of Nicaea, First Ecumenical Council. With regard to the Paulinists are heretics. With regard to the Paulinists who take refuge in the Catholic Church, it has been decided that they definitely need to be baptized, which means that their baptisms were invalid. If, however, some of them have previously functioned as priests, if they seem to be immaculate and irreprehensible, they need to be baptized and ordained by a bishop of the Catholic Church. In this way, one must also deal with the deaconesses or anyone in the ecclesiastical office. With regard to the deaconesses who hold this position, we remind church leaders that they possess no ordination, but are to be reckoned among the laity in every respect, end quote. Boom, drop the mic, Council of Nicaea 325. So here we see that deaconesses are not in the mainstream Catholic Church. They're in the Paulinists. Heretics. If they do come into the church, they want all bishops to know that this deaconess idea is not ordained. They're reckoned, it says explicitly, among the laity in every respect. They don't preach. They don't serve in the liturgy. They don't hold water and wine. They don't read the gospel. Lay people.
Yep.
I just don't see how anyone can come to us and say, oh, in the early church, there was sacramental ordination for women in the diaconate. No. Bye.
Right. So you can't say that it's an understatement of the year to say it's not certain that women can be deacons, which is all Francis said. It's actually certain that they cannot. It's the contrapositive that he should have said.
Yeah. And the evidence we're seeing for these deaconesses are in the fringe areas of heretical establishments.
Right.
not surprisingly. And where do we see people today wanting it? Right. On the fringes of heresy. And then I also just want to drop this quote again from Pope Benedict the 15th. Oh, I said earlier Benedict the 15th, and I made a mistake. It was Benedict the 14th. Got to get my eyes checked on the Roman numerals. Benedict the 14th renewed the prohibition. Women should not dare to serve at the altar. They should be altogether refused this ministry. That means if you're watching right now and you have a daughter who's an altar server, explain to her she can't do that anymore.
Right.
Pope
right.
Benedict the 14th says women should not dare to serve at the altar.
Right.
Are we going to follow the rules or not follow the rules?
Well, this is the tricky part, you know, and it opens up a discussion we can't have in this show because we've already right. gone for a bit. But so what the hell? I mean, how does this work with, you know, now canonically or, you know, disciplinarily, they are allowed by the, you know, basically every right. every diocese.
How diocese of Lincoln is in that's the true. U.S. That's are true. Not allowed. So I did there is that. One. There is one.
But okay, how do you say that 99% of the diocese allow it? How do you circle that square? This is there. We're back into the modernism problem.
Yeah, I mean, I would just say problem. Who's right? Your local ordinary or Pope Benedict the 14th? I'm going right. with the traditional papal teaching.
Well, like who's right? Do. Your local ordinary or basically all of these teachings? This is not an exhaustive list. What we've turned up today, that's just literally, you know, what? Well, who's right? Your local ordinary or St. Paul in 1 Corinthians, right?
Right.
When he says women shouldn't be teaching. Come on.
Right. Yeah.
Out of there. Yeah. Don't let your kids altar girl. Don't yeah. let them be girl altar boys.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not good. I mean, it's confusing for them. It's confusing for everyone else. It's just confusing. We live in a confusing time in the church. Can we please just remove some of the grains of confusion off the scales and tip things back towards orthodoxy, clarity, faith, joy, charity? So we don't have to fight about one more stinking thing in contemporary Catholicism.
Bring discipline into conformity and into harmony with doctrine. That's,
yes.
That's what we're talking about here.
Yep. Yep. All right. Well, that's a show right there. Tim's got his new, oh, I left it downstairs. I was going to bring it. I got a new copy of the Catholic sweet. Republic. Looks good. I need you to sign it.
Yeah.
Signed version.
Didn't I sign? I sent one to you signed. I signed that.
The new one?
The title page. Yeah, the new one.
Oh, maybe I didn't look and see.
Yeah, I signed okay. that cover. I signed the title page. Thanking
okay,
you
I'll check it.
I thanks. I what are you that. Having for dinner? Or whatever you say okay. in, when you sign a book.
So he's got Catholic Republic out.
Go buy it.
Go get
go
it.
Go to Sophia. SophiaInstitute.com.
Yeah, it's better if you buy it at Sophia. I got Infiltration. It was supposed to come out in a week and a half. It's now coming
but
out.
But it's on sale. You can still you buy can it pre-order it. And Sophia. Charlie wants, go buy Infiltration at SophiaInstitute.com. Don't, they get bigger shares and they're telling yes. us really
Amazon takes a little cut. Me. So they like it it's if you buy our books on Sophia.
Charlie and, keeps telling me that.
Yeah, 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 they like that. They like that. So that'll be coming out, and I'll be in Rome next week. So hopefully no like albinos try to kill me or anything.
Yeah. or anyone.
Or anyone, yeah, anyone.
At the end of the day, you don't really want to be killed by anyone. Like, if no. you're getting killed, you'll be like, oh, not, well, at least it's yeah. not an
unless
albino.
It's an odium fidei. If it's an odium fidei,
yeah.
it's okay, I guess. So, yeah, so follow us on Twitter. What else?
Yeah, yeah, follow us
like
on Twitter.
Like the video, subscribe to the channel, hit the bell. Getting all these people saying I've subscribed and I've been unsubscribed.
That's
and I've also noticed that Facebook's been throttling a little bit of our traffic. Have you noticed that, Tim?
We got frozen. Our seven heresies video, which yes. I do follow the count the first three yes. days, it got frozen at 52,000 yeah. K views just, for about a day. It just
yeah,
went like
it just
this.
Spiked and then it went flatline. It's like, how is that possible, YouTube?
It's not. Well, yeah. it's not. So yeah. you complain if you yeah if you have any kinds of problems.
Well, then you complain and then YouTube casts more attention to you, which is not good. You know, yeah. they're shutting down all these conservatives. It drives me crazy. I've already been thinking about Plan B when the day comes.
Yeah. What is? Well, we'll have to. I'm
curious some ideas. What your plan is. I got some stuff in my pocket. Yeah. Well, the show will continue whether it's on YouTube or wherever. So, all that being said, support on Patreon, that'll probably go away one day. But while it's going. And if you support on Patreon at a Centurion level, I'm going to send you a signed and numbered copy of Infiltration. A lot of you already signed up for that. So, if you want that, I'll send a signed and numbered hardback version of Infiltration for Centurion levels, and that's running all through May. So if you're Centurion in May, you get that. So
cool. That's oh, it. Yeah. And then the other thing, since we're just cleaning house here. Yeah. The book should hopefully be out by fall. The feminism book, No Feminist. Christian Feminism. This is what I'm working on.
So,
when I'm
so the title's going to be again, No Christian Feminism.
It's a working title. You know, Sophia okay. likes the simple titles. Yes. No Christian Feminism. We were thinking, I think this is niftier. We're thinking No Cross in Venus's Mirror, right? Because Venus's Mirror is the feminist thing, which looks like a cross. Yeah. No Cross in Venus's Mirror. That might be a subtitle. They like the
yeah,
subway.
That's kind of long.
People are like, what does that mean? It works out well. It works as a good subtitle.
Yeah, like I had for Infiltration, I had like The Smoke of Satan Infiltrating the Catholic Church from Within. They're like, how about Infiltration? Like, okay.
Exactly. No, but they know what they're doing, though. Yeah, I remember when I was publishing with Milo's people, I had a really dope long title.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, how about Catholic Republic? And I was like, I get whatever.
Yeah.
I mean, at a certain point, I don't care.
Well, it's because when you're on a show like we are right now, you don't want to say the 200-year plot to overthrow the Catholic Church with an infiltration from within. Over and over and over. It's just like my new book, Infiltration.
Have you picked up your copy today of the 200-year plot of infiltrating the Catholic Church from within and from without? Like, I get it.
Or like, what was the one? There's No Cross in the Mirror of Venus. What?
No Cross in Venus's Mirror. That might be a subtitle. No Christian Feminism. Punch. No Cross. You know, colon. No Cross in Venus's Mirror. We don't Christian know yet, and it's co-authored, so we have to arm wrestle about what it means.
All right, and that's in the fall.
Fall.
I got a book idea for the fall too. I'm not going to say what it is. Well,
yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway. Okay. Well, hey, everybody. Thanks for watching. Pray the rosary. Oh, for all you dads watching, be a good dad. Man, make life a new adventure for your wife. Be the man, you know?
Right.
Don't be the guy who on Facebook buys date in a box and then, like, you open it up together and you do a date in the box. Have you seen this thing?
No.
It's dumb.
I'm not on Facebook.
You don't know how anymore, to take your wife on a date, so you buy a date in the box?
What is it?
It has like idea food? Cards in it, like where were you when this happened, or like throw the dice and this happened. It's like a improv date.
Wow.
I don't know.
Sounds
like you should. It sounds like you should be able to think of something cooler than that.
Yeah.
You know,
well, half these guys are having to ask permission. Is this date okay? Like, this is the whole problem. It's like you don't have to just hey, yeah. look. This is what we're doing. Even if originally the culture is poison the mind of the girl you're taking out, or even your wife, eventually they'll like it. You got to take the power back. But to do that, you have to be a moral leader, right?
Yeah,
you got to have the one with the other.
That's right. You got to be impressive. If you're not impressive, it's not going to work.
That's right.
You can't just be like, hey, toots, jump in the pickup.
Exactly.
You got to get there, you know?
Yeah, like Jerry Seinfeld always said, these guys that are just laying on the horn, they're looking at a girl at the stoplight crossing the street, and they're just laying on the horn. It's like, these men are out of ideas. Like, you got to.
Yeah, that's like TLC, I don't want no scrubs.
Right. You got the passenger side of
your best friend ride trying to holler at me.
Them?
Yeah.
All right, guys.
Out. All right, here's the Infiltration trailer. Watch this.